Teaching Entrepreneurship at West Point. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
The top 7 paths to freedom is my free gift to you for listening to the show, featuring 7 great ways for a veteran to take their first step into the exciting world of entrepreneurship. To receive your free gift, go to veteranonthemove.com. Or if you're listening on a mobile device, you can text the word veteran to 38470. Lissa Young is a 1986 graduate of the United States Military Academy and a former Army aviator. She flew CH-47D Chinook cargo helicopters. In 2007, Lissa was awarded a presidential fellowship by Harvard University and earned her doctorate there in 2013. Upon graduating from Harvard, Lissa joined a fellow Harvard classmate in an entrepreneurial startup venture by building a craft rum distillery in Ipswich, Massachusetts. The company is now thriving and is known as Privateer Rum. After helping make rum for 7 months, Lissa joined the faculty of the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Leadership at the United States Military Academy in West Point, New York. All right, Lissa Young, thanks for being here today. Welcome to Veteran on the Move. Before we get to talking about business and entrepreneurship, take us back and tell us what you did in the Army.
Well, hey, thanks so much, Joe, for having me on the show. And so I am a 1986 grad of the United States Military Academy. And I branched aviation and left the academy in that summer and went off to flight school. And then spent a career flying helicopters for the Army. And then got out in 2002 and headed off to industry, where I wound up hawking air traffic control systems for Raytheon in the Middle East. And it's quite an exciting adventure. It's kind of like being at Walt Disney World. But when I was there, I thought, you know, I really want to have an opportunity to go back to West Point and teach. And let me just back up and say, when I was in my mid-career, sort of my transition from captain to major, I went back to West Point as what they call a rotating faculty member, and that's a program where the United States Military Academy reaches out to the force and asks individuals to come back and spend 3 years teaching a core course at West Point. And the philosophy behind that program is to allow cadets exposure to, you know, hard-charging, recently active-duty folks. And it's part of sort of the inspirational component for the education at West Point to allow cadets to be taught by folks who are just fresh off the flight line or, you know, out of combat, et cetera. So anyway, I'd done that in the mid-90s and really, really enjoyed it. So when I decided to leave the military, I thought, oh, gosh, it'd be fun to go back as a civilian professor. So I called West Point and said, what do y'all think? And they said, hurry up. So then I applied to a whole bunch of different graduate programs and, interestingly enough, did not get into a single one. And so I was kind of moping around feeling sorry for myself. And then I got a call from a former colleague who, a former West Point colleague who was now a professor at Harvard Business School. And he said, would you help me put on a seminar about the leader development program at West Point here at Harvard? And I said, sure. So I went to the seminar and helped Dr. Snook put this on, and was approached by somebody at the end of the seminar saying, hey, what are you doing with your life? And I said, well, I'm sort of in a stutter step right now. I just tried to get into grad schools but couldn't. And he said, will you come work for me at the Center for Public Leadership? So unbeknownst to me, the guy I was talking to was David Gergen. And I think I'm the only person on the planet in 2000 and whenever this was, 2005, maybe 2006, who had no idea who he was. Wow. And I said, sure, I'll help you do leader development at the Center for Public Leadership. And then I went home and Googled him and fell on the floor. So anyway, so I ended up working with David Gergen at the Center for Public Leadership, which is a center that's housed in the Kennedy School at Harvard. And then during that period, I was called by the dean of the Ed School. And I'm just completely convinced that David Gergen did this, because nobody had even, you know, taken a second look at me. And the dean said, "I'd like to have a meeting with you. We are trying to develop a PhD program in leadership, and we understand from David Gergen that you have a little bit of experience doing that. So would you talk to us?" So I said, "Sure, I'll come over and talk to you." And I sat down with the dean and one of the executive directors of this initiative they wanted to launch. And by the end of that meeting, they said to me, they said, "Well, we don't want to hire you. We would like you to come here and be a student. And then we'd like you to work with us." So after I fell out of my chair and got back up, I said, "Okay, you're on." So that's how I got into Harvard.
Excellent. So you networked your way into Harvard the old-fashioned way.
Unintentionally, absolutely unintentionally. Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I had actually been turned down, you know, twice. So anyway, it was just sort of one of those weird things where all the planets aligned, and I had very good, you know, sponsors and mentors who took care of me. And that's how I ended up matriculating at Harvard, and then spent 6 years there getting my doctorate. And then had been in touch with West Point all through those years, because I wanted to do my dissertation research on the Sandhurst competition that takes place at West Point. Hmm. And the Sandhurst competition is an international military skills competition where the military academies of about 11 different nations send teams here, and they're put through, you know, 9 days of military skills testing. And so I was very much interested, since all my research was all on the intergroup conflict and intergroup cohesion, et cetera, I was really interested in studying the Sandhurst team. So anyway, all that to say that while at Harvard, I spent a lot of time here at West Point working with the Sandhurst teams. Anyway, long story short, finally graduated, and a position opened up in the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Leadership, and I applied for it and got it, and here I am.
Wow, that's awesome. So the main reason that I wanted you to come on the podcast was, a while back, I interviewed a West Point graduate named Paul Tachi, who started Resupply. And
yes,
he spoke of you and the entrepreneurship course that he took there at West Point. And I found it very interesting. I'm like, I was kind of took a step back. I'm like, wait a minute, they're teaching entrepreneurship at West Point? He said, "Oh yeah, yeah, it's an awesome program." How long has entrepreneurship been at West Point?
Well, as a formal academic course, about 10 minutes, and I'll tell you how it happened. So when I was a doctoral student at Harvard, a Harvard Business School professor asked me to work with her on an entrepreneurial leadership course. So I acted as the teaching fellow for that course for about four of the six years that I was there. And I really got an appetite for that topic. And I had always thought stereotypically, we think of an institution like the military as very stodgy, very bureaucratic, pretty stiff. But what's interesting is, if you play your cards right, if you will, there's a lot of intrapreneurship that can happen. And I looked back on my career, and I had realized that I had done a lot of innovating in each one of my commands, and I realized that it's possible to be entrepreneurial inside an organization. So I sort of dubbed it intrapreneurship. But anyway, so I came back here thinking, gosh, that might be a possibility. But then I quickly totally forgot about it because I was so busy. The teaching load at West Point is very, very heavy. It's a teaching institution, and I ended up just going Mach 5 with my hair on fire and didn't even look up for about a year. And then after I'd been teaching introduction to management for a couple of semesters, cadets started to come up to me after class saying, hey, I have this idea for a business. Can you sit with me about it? So I said, okay, I'll do that. And what happened was there were more and more and more cadets coming to me and asking for assistance in this, you know, in their entrepreneurial, you know, ventures, if you will. So I thought, well, if I'm going to spend all this time at a class, why don't I formalize it and propose to the dean that we add a course in the management program called entrepreneurship? So, of course, when I first brought it up, I got shot in the face, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I was going to ask if that was the response.
That was the first response. But then I said, wait, just a cotton picking minute. You know, think about what goes on in combat and how when you cross the LD, all hell breaks loose. There, you know, the kind of leadership that thrives in combat is entrepreneurial leadership and the ability to divert from the plan but stay within the confines of the vision and innovate when all hell breaks loose. So I decided to reframe the request and the value add to the academy. And the second time I sent the proposal up, it got approved. And so now we have a course in the management program that's an elective course. And then let me back up and just say, so what I ended up doing with the course is running it like a much more like a graduate seminar. So it's not about content necessarily. It's all about helping cadets put their ideas together, do the market research, do, you know, all of the business plan research, and just help them get ready to pitch their ideas at a competition. So it's kind of like Shark Tank, West Point Shark Tank, if you will. So by the second month, I require that cadets get up and start delivering. So they get up and they pitch their business plan, and then we tear them up, and then they go back to the drawing board, and we do that for 3 or 4 iterations before then they're entered in the Mid-Hudson Regional Business Plan Competition, where they pitch in front of investment bankers. And you know, the course just took off. It's really been quite interesting. And the first year we competed, all the teams that entered won their categories. I had 5 teams enter, and they won all 5 won first place, and then they were catapulted to the New York Business Plan Competition finals. And in that year, one of the teams won the viewers or the People's Choice Award, if you will, which is, you know, it's not winning a category, but they did win $15,000, so it wasn't bad. And then the second year I did it, we didn't do anything. Everybody just came home and, you know, we were awful. And then this year we did it, and all the teams that entered either placed first, second, or third in their category. And of those, the ones who placed first or second were sent to the New York State finals. So I ended up taking 4 teams to the finals, and of those, one team won third place in the products division. So they're doing great. And one of the things that I require of cadets, if they're going to enter the business plan competition, because it's no kidding, you win money, and that money has strings attached to it. The money is followed by the organizations that provide it.
Yeah.
And alongside the seed money, they also provide in-kind consultative services, whether that be office space, management consulting, sales assistance, marketing assistance, all of that. So if you think about the tension is that cadets don't, you know, we're not producing CEOs, we're producing lieutenants. Mm-hmm. And so I require that cadets, in order to enter the business plan competition, that they have a civilian counterpart who can run the business while they're in the Army. Paul actually taught me the value of that, because he didn't have a civilian counterpart, and everywhere he goes, he has to get JAG or the Judge Advocate General Corps to kind of sign off on the amount of time he spends running his business.
Right.
And I'm just trying to protect cadets from having to fight that fight every time they change duty stations. In addition, there are the optics with respect to the academy that, you know, the public isn't paying the academy to produce CEOs. you know, they're producing lieutenants. And so I'm very sensitive to that.
Sure.
But I'm also very much devoted to the idea that the skills and abilities that they develop in the process of actually having to put a business together, pitch it to a bunch of investment bankers, you know, and follow through, those skills are, you know, they're very valuable for a young lieutenant as well.
Absolutely. So, well, hey, Lissa, hold on just a second. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Have you joined the Veteran on the Move Facebook group? I personally invite every guest that I have on the podcast to join the group. So the Veteran on the Move Facebook group is a great way to connect with previous podcast guests. Our Facebook group will keep you in touch with other veterans that are transitioning to entrepreneurship, and you will also get great updates and free guides on the people, programs, and resources that will help you in your transition to entrepreneurship. All right, we're back with Lissa Young, who's currently teaching entrepreneurship at West Point. And Lissa, you were talking before the break that Paul Tacci, who started Resupply, who's been on the show, he everywhere he goes, he has to go to the JAG and get permission to continue to operate his business and disclose what he's doing and everything. And it reminded me, I had a Clint was on, a Navy SEAL was on a while back, and he's mostly writing books now, but he'd done some security stuff, and he had talked about when a couple of those SEAL Team 6 guys that were on the Osama bin Laden raid had gone public and written a book, the Navy command basically went on a witch hunt, and Clint Emerson was going to be one of the ones that was, you know, being strung up essentially. And mm-hmm. he was like, out of like 20 or 25 of them that were doing businesses and stuff publicly on the side, mm-hmm. he was the only one that came out of it clean. And the only thing that saved him, he'd been fighting this witch hunt, you know, lawsuit, whatever, investigation that had been going on for several months. And all of a sudden it dawned on him. He's like, wait a minute, I went down to the JAG on base and I got permission to start. Hey, let me go. And he went and found the permission form, and the command had signed off on it and the JAG had signed off on it. And he brought that in. He's like, does this help? And they're like, oh, well, I guess you had permission. So yeah, you're off. And little thing saved him. And there was like 20 plus other guys that went down because they had not gotten permission. So it is very, that was one of the things I fought the whole time I was in the Marine Corps. I didn't really have a robust business or anything going on, but I was always doing something or looking and trying online business and that stuff. And I was always very, very cautious and cognizant. It was almost like I'm a sleeper entrepreneur, trying not to let anybody find out, that kind of thing. And it was so nice when I finally retired. I'm like, I'm free. I can actually be one now. You know?
Right, right.
So yeah, it's everybody that's still in the military, you definitely need to be concerned about that and make sure you cover your bases and don't do something that's going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, that, and you also don't want to overcommit in such a way that you can't take care of soldiers.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's a 24/7 life. It's not a job. And so it is, you know, I always encourage my cadets to think about, you know, bump their thoughts beyond their 5 or 6 year commitment and allow what happens to them in the military. I mean, be open to how their life's going to be changed by the Army. And then, you know, have faith that there is life beyond the Army and, you know, they will get to it. So,
And I think, you know, transition is big as far as people retiring or just getting out. Mm-hmm. And I personally feel that there's no better transition plan than to maybe, you know, within a couple of years of getting out, you get a business going. And especially with all the online business opportunities that are out there right now, you get a business mm-hmm. going, and maybe, you know, if you're married, maybe your spouse is the key player kind of allow you to step away from it or work at it at a distance. And, you know, so you don't have to be all in with it. But if you can get a business going a couple of years before you're getting out, where really the only thing that's keeping you from scaling is the fact that you're getting out. That's the ideal scenario to be in. Of course, it's hard to do. It's hard to time it correctly and everything.
Right. And I think, yeah, because deployments can really step on you with respect to that. But I also am totally with you in having either a spouse or some civilian partner who can maintain the, you know, the battle rhythm of the business.
Absolutely. And that's great. That's a great insight on your part that you require whoever is competing in the business plan competition to mm-hmm. have a civilian counterpart.
Right.
Somebody
Absolutely.
They can trust to keep the continuity going, because I don't know how many times I either a long-winded combat deployment or a training mm-hmm. exercise or something would happen, and then it would oftentimes the project I was pushing towards was gone or over with, or you just lose the momentum and you can't recover.
Exactly. Yeah. The other thing too that really helps businesses launch, as you well know, is you know, is really leveraging your network and being able to meet people and talk with them and, you know, do a lot of handshaking and, you know, visits, if you will, like physically moving around the country, meeting people. And deployments just don't allow you to do that, nor does the everyday life of a lieutenant or a captain. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, you don't have that luxury to just take leave and head out. So.
Right. And, you know, if you are involved in entrepreneurship while you're still in the military, maybe you don't even start a business, but you're surrounded by entrepreneurial people, you're involved in entrepreneurial events, you're mm-hmm. you're networking, you're building that network while you're still in. And then as you start approaching the end of your time, if you choose to get out, or if the Army tells you you're getting out, mm-hmm. you know, probably the most valuable thing you could have built up when it's time to get out is your civilian network, especially your civilian mm-hmm. entrepreneurial network.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, you've probably seen the same thing. There's a burgeoning interest in entrepreneurship. And I don't know if it's because Shark Tank, you know, has sort of infiltrated the minds of the millennials or what, but there's all kinds of events, at least in major urban areas. I get a lot of, you know, marketing email about entrepreneurship programs and events, and we get West Point now gets invited to a whole bunch of events in New York City, and so I think that there's no there's not a lack of opportunity for soldiers to engage with those networks and learn the things that they might want to learn and meet the kind of people they need to meet to be successful out in the quote unquote real world. I just think the timing right now is really sweet for wannabe entrepreneurs.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, back the first time I went to college, I think the idea of getting a degree in entrepreneurship was almost non-existent.
Right, right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And now you've got mm-hmm. major universities that have entire, not only entire degree programs, but graduate degree programs.
And exactly.
And now you can even get exposed to it at West Point.
Right. Yeah. Even at West Point. Yep. Exactly.
So, do you want to talk about maybe not necessarily specific businesses that have come out of the last 3 years competing in the business competition, or maybe at least generally speaking, you know, what kind of ideas are cadets coming up with and success rates and, you know, problem solving mm-hmm. opportunities that are going on?
Yeah, so the ideas are pretty widespread, and some are, you know, nonprofit social entrepreneurship ideas, and some are, you know, like prosthetics that assist victims of strokes. I mean, there's a whole bunch of, I mean, it's just a wide variety that cadets come up with. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that I require cadets to attend. Like, we launched the course in January, and in early February, up here at West Point, every February, the DARPA competition takes place, and that's the Department of Defense Advanced Research Association.
I'm familiar with it. I know what you're talking about, but I don't know what everything stands for.
Yeah, sorry, I should have looked that up. But so yeah, it's where all these mad scientists invent things that are supposed to make soldiering a little bit easier, mm-hmm. More survivable, et cetera, et cetera. So I always find that competition really, really interesting and very fecund for cadets to go and get some ideas. And one of the things that I ask them to do is approach teams who might be interested in taking their idea to the market and then I have the management cadet or the entrepreneur cadet be their, you know, their management guy, their marketing guy. And the cadets who have been, interestingly enough, the cadets who've been most successful have been those hybrid teams that have management cadets as well as engineering cadets. And so a couple of years ago, cadets came up with this pretty interesting idea of a SOC. It's a sort of super fortified SOC that you put on your feet, but in it, it had a an interesting sort of heel apparatus, and it provided a 40% lift assistance for stroke victims that were learning how to walk again. And it was attached to a belt on their waist, and the device learned the individual's gait and then provided this very gentle lift assist on the heel every time that individual picked up either their left or right leg, depending on what was disabled. So, and then another team of cadets got together and they put together a way to, and this was sort of in the clean energy realm, they put together a way to transmorph, if you will, human feces into power, into electrical power. And the argument was that they would use this device out in the field during field operations and exercises so that it would prevent the, you know, the whole burning your feces detail.
In the 55-gallon drum. Yeah.
Exactly.
Stirring
it. This thing was pretty, yeah, exactly. So this is what inspired them because they had been on the poop detail at, you know, at Camp Buckner. And they thought, God, there's got to be a better way. So they came up with this really interesting way to change the chemical composition of, well, I guess it would be good, both chemical and biological composition of feces, and turn it into electrical power. And they actually built this thing and demonstrated it at the competition, which was pretty interesting. And then there was another team that came up with a way to help veterans transition to the job market. And that was very timely. And they launched their company, and they're doing really well. Matter of fact, that team went on to compete in the Forbes business plan competition in Manhattan and won that one as well. And so they're doing great.
Wow. And what is that all about? How does it help veterans transition?
It's called OYA, OYAA.com, OYA.com. And it's like a LinkedIn, but it's a little more aggressive. And what it allows folks to do is when they're approaching like that 6-month mark before transitioning, they come onto OYA and they put up a resume and they list a series of skills that they have. Because it's often, as you know, in the transition from military to civilian, one of the biggest stumbling blocks is being able to articulate what it is you're able to do. And right. And so what OYA does is they work with transitioning vets and help them articulate what, you know, how their skills can be translated into things like, you know, IT project management or code writing or, you know, whatever it is that the kid did in the military, there will be relevance in the civilian world. And then, so this is a two-way marketplace. So that's the, you know, the kids looking for jobs. And then OYA reaches out to organizations that are looking for part-time assistance on projects where they have to do, you know, a surge hiring. And they work with the companies to match what they're looking for with these veterans coming out of the military. And so it's a great way to just get veterans started on short-term employment. And then it assists them with education or skill building. It gets them hooked up with vo-tech centers as well as junior colleges to access those skill sets that they need for more technical jobs. And it's just a wonderful idea. And they've just taken off like wildfire. And interestingly enough, there was a cadet who pitched this year something similar, but it was more about mentoring. And his organization is called VPOSIUM. I'm not sure what that word is all about. But what he does is he matches up veterans who are coming out, again, you know, transitioning to civilian world, with veterans who have transitioned successfully and have turned around and said, hey, I'd like to mentor somebody. And so he links these pairs up based on interests and skill sets. And then the mentor helps guide the transitioner just with respect to life skills, to job hunting skills, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Not to mention that the veteran then has access to that individual, the mentor's network. And this company has just launched, so I don't have any data on success rates, but I'm definitely going to be tracking him to see if there's a, you know, if there's something that he can articulate with respect to the success rate of placement.
Yeah, anyway, it's interesting as young as these kids are still in college that they're they're coming up with solutions that are, you know, way out in front of them. You know, they have that much foresight down the road to be coming up with solutions for like that.
Exactly. And it's interesting how, you know, at any business plan competition, you have to tell that story, right? That real catchy story. Mm-hmm. And both of these teams, the Oya as well as Viposium, told stories about friends of theirs who were trying to, you know, who had left the military and wound up jobless for 6 or 8 months, terrified, you know. And that really left an impression on these two kids. And they, you know, they, like you said, they went out and invented a solution to it.
Yeah.
So,
well, hey, listen, we're getting close to the end of our time. You know, usually I like to say if I like to give you a chance to plug your business and how we would get in touch with you or whatever. I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate in this case. And but is there anything that comes to mind, a resource or a program out there that, you know, if you're talking to somebody that's still in or getting ready to go through a transition and they want to get started in entrepreneurship, does anything come to mind that you would recommend, you know, where they go and check it out?
So I think, you know, it's a great question. And I'm pretty sure most folks who are approaching transition probably know this, but LinkedIn is a great place. But if folks transitioning from the military specifically want military mentors, then there's a couple of places. There's a guy in Special Forces who was a tactical officer here who started a website called Military Mentors, and I think it's militarymentors.com. And somebody who's transitioning can go there and sort of review all of the mentors and find someone who fits their profile and then ask them to help them. So that's one. And then the other resource could be Oya. And Oya is more geared toward sort of technical, transactional, like they'll get you a job kind of thing. Less about mentoring, although they'll help you get educational resources and skills certifications. So that's another thought for folks who are just hey, I want to be an aircraft mechanic. How do I do that? So if you go to Oya, that'll give you an opportunity to find resources that'll help you get to mechanic school, aviation mechanic school. And then Viposium is, you know, like Military Mentor, a little softer, and it's about, you know, interpersonal mentoring to help with the psychological aspects of transitioning. In addition to, you know, accessing a good network out in corporate America. So I'd say that those are probably good resources for folks thinking about transitioning. But the only other thing I would say is that a lot of military folks don't get how valuable they are in corporate America. And corporate America is not looking, and you probably know this, they're not looking for technical skills. They're looking for that leadership capability. And so even if someone doesn't have a clue about what they want to do, they will still be very successful out on the job market because most companies are looking for leaders. And by definition, if you spent any time in the Army or the Marines or the Navy or the Air Force, well, maybe not the Air Force, but anyway, I'm just kidding. But, you know, you're going to have some basic leadership skills that, you know, we really underestimate how many people in the military have those. I mean, or we overestimate how many people not in the military have them, right? At least based on, you know, human resource managers and hiring managers who I've talked to. They invariably will bubble military veterans to the top of their piles, regardless of technical skills.
Absolutely. And those skills you're referring to, you know, leadership and all the other ones are soft skills. You know,
right.
People
right.
skills, leadership skills, life lessons skills, those kinds of things that.
Exactly. Maturity.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Mission focused. Get the job done, stick-to-itiveness and all that.
Integrity. So, yeah. I think integrity is a big part of
all
it, too.
All those core values, exactly.
Yes, Yes.
So I agree. I think too many of us underestimate, because it's hard to put that stuff down on a resume. It's hard to quantify it.
You know,
we all focus on the technical skills, like I need to get my MBA or a CPA or my bachelor's degree. That's stuff you can put on a resume, and people think that it, you know, can quantify that. But knowing how to lead people when they're tired, wet, cold, hungry.
Right.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? I don't understand. So a lot of companies get that, you know.
Yeah, they do. And I'll tell you, JP Morgan just sent, I just escorted 6 vice presidents from JP Morgan. And I had them sit in on my international management course. And I was amazed that they said this, but they said, we don't care what you know how to do. What we care about is the leadership you've been exposed to and that you've had to demonstrate. We will teach you those technical skills. We will send you to get an MBA. Because the cadets kept asking them, do I need to get an MBA before I apply for JP Morgan? And they're like, hell no.
Wow.
No, we will send you to get an MBA. What we want is your leadership. And so I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah, that's incredibly powerful. Six vice presidents from JP Morgan. We don't really care what you know.
No,
we're more concerned with your leadership abilities.
And they said that's what we need in the banking industry, is we need the integrity infused leadership. We need people who understand selfless service, who understand sacrifice, who are courageous, who have moral courage. And they just, you know, they were rolling out all these qualities that the military is known for. And they said, we'll teach you how to bank. You know, we can teach anybody how to bank, but we cannot develop those kinds of, you know, the integrity and the courage and the stick-to-itiveness, like you said. So I just thought that was really, really powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. It doesn't surprise me, but it's phenomenal to hear 6 people from a powerhouse company like that actually put that into words and say it in a group of cadets.
Right. Exactly. Because the cadets were really, you know, they're very, interestingly enough, management majors are really deferential to people with MBAs, and they think that there's something magical that happens when you get an MBA. And so I think it was really important for them to hear that that's not what's going to get you hired.
Yeah, that's great. Well, hey, Lissa, you've provided some great insight in what's going on in entrepreneurship at West Point. You know, good on you for bringing entrepreneurship to West Point and letting those cadets get out there and test their business skills in the civilian sector. And, you know, I always found that the more time I spent doing stuff and learning stuff on the civilian side, the more tools I brought back to the squadron or my unit to apply in a military situation, whether it was, you know, whatever kind of skills. Skill sets and that kind of thing that I would get exposed to playing around in the civilian world. It definitely helped me in my military career and vice versa. So
exactly.
So
well, I really appreciate you having me on, and I love what you're doing. I think this is a wonderful way to, you know, to get veterans sort of focused on less about, oh my gosh, what I don't have, but, you know, really leveraging what they do have. And then I also love the idea that they can plug into this podcast and meet people as well.
Absolutely.
I think that's great.
That's what it's all about. Introducing them to the people, programs, and resources to transition entrepreneurship.
Awesome. All right. That's great.
All right, Lissa.
And also, Joe, I'm going to, next year when we get ramped up again, I'm going to invite you to come visit. And I'd love it if you address my entrepreneurship cadets. They'd love to hear from you.
Wow. But yeah, I'd love that. That'd be great.
Okay. And we'll maybe if we have you come in the fall, you can come to a football game.
Oh, I would love that too. Hey, in working with USAA,
yes.
my wife and I were able to attend my first and her first Army Navy game in December. So we were at the game.
That's why we won.
And the Army, the first time in 14 years. I have to admit, I was, you know, being a Marine, I was rooting for the Navy, but I was like 14 years. I almost kind of want the Army to win. I don't let anybody know that, but it was a phenomenal experience, phenomenal weekend. You know, good on USAA for all the other stuff that they put on.
Yeah, they do.
But great, that would be
great. Army, Navy.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I'd love to attend a West Point football game.
Amen. They're more fun here.
I look forward to it.
All right. Let's keep in touch then.
Thanks, Liz. I appreciate it.
All right, Joe. Thank you.
As you can tell from listening to the Veteran on the Move podcast, interviews are a great way to tell your story and spread the word about your business. If you would like to get booked as a podcast guest, I recommend Interview Valet. You can check out Interview Valet at veteranonthemove.com/valet. Be sure to check out thrive15.com, the world's premier online education platform that helps entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs learn how to start or grow a successful business. Start your free 30-day membership by going to thrive15.com and use the promo code VETERAN. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.